The following segment contains strong language that may be offensive to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Good morning. You are with Counterculture on Reality Check Radio. This is Marie, and I have great pleasure now to introduce to you Tony Pitt. He has been the co-author on an extensive report from Family First. It's called Is It Working? An Evidence-Based Review of the Decriminalisation of Prostitution in New Zealand. As you know, in the past, I've spoke to Ellie Marie Diamond from Wahinetua Rising, and Tony has probably done a deep dive into all of the information and data on decriminalisation of prostitution in New Zealand with this report. Tony, good morning and welcome to Counterculture.
Good morning, Marie. It's really nice to be able to talk to you, especially about this subject, and clarify a few of the things that are hidden in the woodwork.
Yeah, I spoke to Paul Brennan when we were talking about what we're going to be doing with Counterculture for the year and some of the things to highlight. And this, for me, is a story that nobody is talking about. No one wants to talk about it anywhere. It's almost like a dirty little secret in New Zealand society. So how does a lovely chap like you from a manufacturing and engineering background go to authoring a very substantive report on the effects of decriminalisation of prostitution in New Zealand? There's a story there, Tony. I can feel it.
Well, essentially what happened, I'd made one or two submissions, and particularly the environment of the baby in the womb and what happens to the baby in the womb to select committees. And then someone came to me, in fact it was Beth Srebitsky. She got a petition with Parliament to review. In actual fact, it was what's happened on the street with prostitution. And they agreed to have a select committee discussion on it. And she asked me to help frame a paper put to the select committee. So that was in 2013. We actually did that with Beth, and Bob McCoskey came down with some prostitutes that Beth got contact with to Parliament. And they gave their stories to the select committee. We actually spent something like 2 hours with them because there was an internal discussion in Parliament. And they were fascinated. They were very supportive, came out afterwards and spoke to us and said they would follow it through. Unfortunately, in the subsequent months, there became a change in government. People from that committee just fell away, and so it died. Out of that, I said to Beth that I hadn't had any interest in prostitution or any working with prostitution. It came through working with Beth on that when she put the detail of the report in. And I said, well, we just can't leave it there because we know there's a huge problem. And there are a number of small organisations like Beth's, which is Freedom, I can't remember the exact title, but and like Denise Ritchie.
Stop Demand.
Helped us. I instigated Beth to organise a coalition of people with these small groups. And we tried for probably about 18 months to work something out, to come together to make something effective rather than working of the individual small groups. I did a lot of research in the meantime through Bob had said, you need to get some official information acts going, which I did. And I ended up with the all the reports that the NZPC supply to the Ministry of Health to obtain their government grant, which they have to run the NZPC. And that grant amounts to over $1 million a year. So I got a hold of all their reports at that time, and I think they were all typed up. So I had hard copies, about 2,500 pages of these. And so I started going through these pages, seeing actually the content of the report and what was happening. Unfortunately, the coalition really was getting nowhere. And Bob turned to me one day and he said, look, we've got to write a report on this. He said, you write it and I'll publish it. And what it initially did was to look at a number of things that had happened from the introduction of the Prostitutes Law Reform Act 2003. There were a number of constraints on that report from stopping it becoming full discrimination. Those constraints were, and they're very important to what happened has happened over the past years. One was that overseas people could not come in on temporary visas and be able to prostitute, and so that was banned. The other thing was that it was illegal to have unsafe sex, and that's something that certainly the NZPC have really pushed and promoted for in the main. And then there was a third caveat in there that that the government would review, have a review committee after a few years to review how the Act was going. So what actually happened was that that review committee, which was the PLRC 2008, that was a large committee that was set up to see how the law was progressing. Out of that report, they started 2-3 years beforehand to request input from, the main input was from the Christchurch School of Medicine, and they put out a report in 2007. And that report was then used by the committee in 2008 to provide information on how the prostitution law was going. Now, one of the things people don't realise, say, I had a shock when I found out that this report from the Christchurch School of Medicine in 2007 was compiled in conjunction with the NZPC. So the questions were compiled with them, and they were very good questions in actual fact. And then the NZPC were employed to interview the prostitutes to collect the answers.
Right. So there was a complete vested interest there.
Oh, yes. And this is the story the whole way through the prostitution law reform. Probably have missed out that what happened with the prostitution law reform in 1987, a group of prostitutes, one of them being Catherine Healy, got together and decided that they needed to make some changes to the law, because at that time the girls were criminalised, and so they could be sent to prison, they got a blot on their lives and couldn't get to work in future because they'd got a criminal record. So these girls got together and formed these clauses, which they then found a lobbyist, one of the MPs, and again, I've forgotten his name, to put forward this bill. So in actual fact, the NZPC wrote virtually, in fact, I was saying, all of the clauses to this law reform. So right at the inset, they designed the system that we now live with.
Mm. So just to summarise, so really the genesis of this was in 1987.
Yeah.
With the foundation, the New Zealand Prostitutes Collective, which Dame Catherine Healy,
yes,
was at the centre of. It finally gets passed through in 2003 with the Clark government.
Yes.
And obviously they have a friendly ear in Parliament to help move forward with that. To remind people, because that's 20 years ago now, yes, Tony, remind people what was the public face that they were sold of the benefits of this act for those working in sex work were going to get. So what was the front-facing information that they had that everyone thought, oh, yes, jolly good, that is a good idea?
Yes. Well, initially, Helen Clark was Minister of Health in 1987, and she started funding the NZPC on the basis that it would reduce HIV and the spread of HIV. That's how the law started, that they saw that by controlling what happened in prostitution, it would help curtail HIV. Then the whole facet of that was pushed in Parliament was that it would help the girls, assist the girls. They would no longer be prosecuted and criminalised, so they had a better future. But the terrible thing about the legislation that the NZP included was that pimps, who are known worldwide as criminals of the sex world, were made legal. This point was vigorously debated and brought up by some of the members of Parliament, that how could this law be pushed forward to benefit the girls when the worst criminals were actually made legal overnight and became operations managers and essentially glorified in business managers, and brothels became legal. So there's a great deal of debate by many MPs. They saw that the sleight of hand that was going on, but in the end, law was passed by one vote and one abstention, much to the glee of the NZPC.
Wow. Yeah, you forget. You forget. So then the effect of this decriminalisation versus legalisation, for most people, they will think, well, what's the difference? What is the difference, Tony?
Yeah, well, it's quite simple when it boils down. Decriminalisation means that there are no specific laws for prostitutes or the sex industry. So it's just open to civil law. Legalisation means that there are some caveats that restrain. And one would be saying that in New Zealand, it was illegal to have unsafe sex. In other words, they've got to wear condoms. That actually moves it slightly away from full decriminalisation. But when it's full decriminalisation, it struck me when you're talking to Chelsea Geddes about her standing up for a girl in the brothel, and she went round to the police and because she'd been knocked out by one of the clients. In actual fact, you see, she should have been covered by the full legal law because...
It was assault.
Yes, it was assault. It was clear, and yet the police took no notice and didn't record it, if you remember, that's what she said. And that happens in a lot of cases. And this is one of the problems with the scenario that the NZPC have put out, that everything's lovely in the garden. The police, and I think there's an exception in Christchurch, they've often got commended of how well they support women who've been assaulted, prostitutes. But in general, there's this essentially stigma that the police need some training to understand what these girls go through. And it is, they've got just as many civil rights as anyone else.
Mm, mm. So you've got essentially, there are three components from what I understand. So there's the girls that go out and work in the street, which I think right back from the beginning, this is what they were hoping, that was the group they were hoping to protect. Then you've got standalone operators. So that's sort of like the girls that bring stuff into their own homes and do things privately,
that
from what I understand.
Soobs.
Yes. Soobs, yes, for Soobs. What a wonderful acronym, Soobs. So you've got the Soobs, and so those are the ones. Social media has been tremendous for them. And then you've got the classic brothel as we know it. Now, from what you've described, by making the pimps, particularly of those classic brothels, now legal,
yes,
for all intents and purposes,
yes,
that must have been, from a criminal element, a payday beyond all paydays. It now then meant that they could, those sort of underworld elements are now able to control legal work through these organisations and not be pulled up for it.
Oh, exactly that, yes. And the police, at the same time, the police had no authorities to enter these brothels. Any authority that the police had was taken away. One of the appalling things is they were unable to check on underage girls. Another point, actually, it's easy to misunderstand. One of the ideas was that about this law, it was sold that street prostitution would almost disappear and numbers would reduce. Because,
and what's the reality of that, Tony?
Oh, it's 20 just blossomed. It's just completely blossomed. I mean, it's very easy for girls to be enticed. Now pimps are legal. They quite openly can groom girls into prostitution. There's nothing to stop them to go up and start talking to the girls. They find homeless girls and start treating them as girlfriends. I'm not sure whether anyone else has described just how invasive into young girls' lives this grooming is. It's an absolute art, and there are websites telling pimps how to groom girls.
And this is going on in New Zealand right now?
Oh, yes, completely, yes, yes. And it comes under the pseudonym of trafficking, and which we'll probably move on to at some stage. Mm.
So one of the things that I've also got your UN submission, which you put in January 2024, yeah. And one of the things that stunned me in here, under the title Hidden Forms of Prostitution in New Zealand, is under the Prostitution Act of 2003, the Ministry of Health officials are legally required to inspect brothels, but not soobs. So that's the owner-operators for all intents and purposes. However, by 2015, only 11 brothels had been inspected. Only customs officials have unfettered access to brothels. Customs officials.
Yes, yes, and that's so that they can check on illegal immigrants.
And how often is that happening?
It's been happening more frequently in the last 4 or 5 years because there was an uproar in about 2017 where they'd actually issued some figures on the number of raids or that they'd done. Figures they quoted was they were out by about 300-400%. So they hadn't done their work properly, and so they went back and started reviewing that. But the problem there with the brothels, say there are no official inspections done, and that actually breaks the law.
Well, that was going to bring me back because, of course, within that original Act in 2003, there was a provision in there to go back and revisit how that Act was working, which I think from memory was 2008?
2008, yes, yeah.
Yeah, 2008. So, A, did that happen? And if it did it happen in such a way that it was done without a bias or with the New Zealand Prostitutes Collective up to their eyeballs in navigating that process?
Yeah, the committee, I remember the name, it's the Prostitution Law Review Committee 2008. One of the things they did, they actually confirmed that some of these pimps were still of criminal element and that they were still coercing the girls to have unsafe sex and to have sex with people that they had rejected.
In 2008, so they had that committee set up.
Yes.
So was it a cursory box-ticking exercise or did they actually go in and have a look at some of the elements in terms of grooming, inspections, visas, underage, all the elements to ensure that what they were promising, as you mentioned before, a reduction in street walking numbers, all of those things, did they do a due diligence and check against, hey, we said this would happen in 2003, here we are 5 years later and we have achieved A, B, C, D, E, F, G?
They essentially did do due diligence with caveats. And you're recalling me that they'd asked for the previous report, the CSOM, Christchurch School of Management, which is where the New Zealand Prostitutes Collective went out and got the data to review the numbers on the streets. And that was done over to a 2 week period in winter when it was cold. And again, they knew girls didn't appear every night. And so they actually reviewed and came up with some figures which have been in dispute. And that's a figure that has been quoted in the media for 10, 15 years afterwards. The committee was completely biased. I think Denise Ritchie was actually asked to go on the committee at one stage, and I think she refused because it was too biased. They had very clever-sounding titles, a women's organisation for the Christian movement type of thing. But when I had a look at the background to that movement, I may not have had the title exactly right. It was not a Christian movement in any stretch of the imagination. So, and the result of that report anyway, there were 28 recommendations and only less than half of them were actually implemented from that 2008 review committee. One of the important things from that review committee, they said that because it had been to some extent inconclusive, that committee's report, the review committee should be repeated in 2018. Now, that was that's going a long way around. But so what happened when Bob asked me to do the work initially on this report? I did the work up to about 2013-12 and to cover what had happened from that review committee. And then in 2018, when I was just started doing this report, I contacted the Centre and Official Information Act to ask Andrew Little, who was in charge, when the review for 2018 was going to occur. And he just said, there's no way that's going to occur. It's got no rating at all. So forget it. And then Bob turned around and said, well, we should do the review as well. And that actually is why the report became so big and so extensive that I then got further reports from the NZPC up to about, I think the last one I had was about 2019. Put the information in the Is It Working? An evidence-based report. Now, one of the most important thing with the NZPC, whenever anyone criticised them or criticised the law, they simply said, where is your evidence? We need evidence-based information to be able to make any comment. In actual fact, it's about 2012. Every so often, these NZPC reports to the health department would contain something quite interesting. And what they did then was to review the logistic information that they should be collecting. And the NZPC actually did the review with some organisation and came up with a load of data that they should collect. I've reviewed that data and it was sort of 70% okay, but from my experience in industry and knowing what's required, they'd missed out about 30% of the information. A lot of it was about underage people, which is significant to me. And so they produced this report saying that this is what they're going to collect, the data they're going to collect. The Ministry of Justice also specifically requested them to monitor numbers in prostitution on a regular basis. Out of that came absolutely nothing. It was never heard of again, never referred to, and yet they kept on complaining or saying that anyone that criticised them had to have evidence-based information. So that's why I came to look at their reports and I extracted information in their reports. But again, what happened with those was after we did the went down to Parliament with the review committee with Beth Zabritsky's petition, the following six-month report was completely diluted. And whereas previously they would have comments about that some of the girls had made to them in the brothels about coercion that they'd experienced, there was only one report ever from that time on that ever even vaguely mentioned coercion. I just think it would be worthwhile reading some of the NZP report comments on coercion by operators or pimps.
Yeah, absolutely, because that will then give us some context in terms of, you know, the picture that they're trying to paint versus sort of the actual realities that you're starting to see from the work that you're doing.
Yeah, so the following are just a few of the NZPC reported comments regarding operators undermining safe sex, and these were in the reports to the Department of Health. Workers report that managers at some venues encourage the worker to allow the clients to kiss and perform unprotected oral sex on them. Some contact NZPC for advice on how to deal with this pressure from both clients and managers. Later in the same report, despite the enactment of the Prostitute Reform Act 2003, it remains an ongoing issue of brothel operators trying to exert their power over sex workers. In a quote from an earlier report, other operators who display these signs, safe sex posters, and appear to support safe sex, in fact, do not really care about safer sex practice and preferring to take the money will encourage their workers to perform unsafe sex. Staff and sex workers are concerned that operators continue to pressure workers to perform unsafe sex. Some operators allow people with noticeable mental health issues to work in the sex area. The last item should be particular concern, as the previous year the NZPC had reported that a Christchurch staff report an increase in contact with people with mental health or drug-related issues. This has demanded a response from the NZPC. And later, we have lost several women to suicide and illness in this report period. For example, sex workers may not be supported by some operators to turn away drunk clients. Drunk clients are more likely to have difficulty with condom use. As a result of that, I sent an Official Information Act to police regarding unsafe sex practices to establish just what follow-up has been made regarding unsafe sex practices. Bearing in mind that this is a report from the NZPC to the Department of Health, and the Department of Health are responsible for enacting this health and safety. Official Information Act of September 2018 to the police produced the following response from them. The table below shows the number of proceedings against offenders or the specified offences for the period July 2009 to August 2018. The table only shows calendar years where there was a proceeding against an offender. In other words, there were no proceedings for most years. And the table is fairly easy to see. I'll just read out the totals. The year 2009, there were two prosecutions. 2012, there were two prosecutions. 2015, there were four prosecutions. 2017, there was one prosecution.
And that's the sum total?
That's the sum total.
You know, this is the thing, Tony. It is, that's where the sort of the Wild West element comes in. I mean, like, even with that being prostitute collective reporting to the Ministry of Health, yes. There are still some red flags there.
Well, the fact is that the NZPC had been into these brothels. They talked to the girls. They knew which girls they were. This report went to the Ministry of Health, and there was no response, never been any response from the Ministry of Health. And the same with the Ministry of Justice.
Yeah. So
they are both guilty, those departments. And it's just like COVID or whatever. I mean, we're talking about Ministry of Health, with the people dealing with COVID. And regard those inspections, it took me over 12 months to get that information on those inspections. Mm. And the various people ducked and dived.
Yeah. No, well, look, we know that these departments pick and choose and cherry pick in terms of what they look at, you know. So, and we've seen that with, I've also been doing some interviews with the Gloria Bowles Support Leavers Trust, and, you know, they had people complain to WorkSafe around working conditions and what constituted volunteer work versus given work. And of course, the same thing, the report just fell into defest and disappeared. And things only started to happen when the lawyer took a case against the ministry for their inaction. And in a way, it's almost the same here. I mean, even though you guys have been doing the work that you've been doing, the prostitute collective themselves have sort of, you know, popped up some red flags, and it's, you know, it has fallen on deaf ears. So then it comes back to, doesn't it, a political will? I get the impression that there was no political will in the previous 6 years. What is your feeling now that we've had a change of government? Do you believe, you know, with this report, with the submission to the UN, with some of the work that's going on in Australia, that there potentially is a political will now, or finding an advocate within the House where you can get this information, get this document tabled and say, hey, look, can we at least have a committee and discuss this and actually put this back on the table to be looked at and reviewed properly?
When Bob McCroskey published this report, he sent it to every politician, every media outlet that had some potential output, and he put out a publicity brochure. Mm-hmm. No one has ever responded.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I haven't discussed was that during my look at the reports from the NZPC, I found that one report had been actually duplicated, and yet the Department of Health had claimed had paid out money over $550,000 on that report. The two reports are identical from different periods of time, and the only page that was different was the claim for different money. And there's been no response from that from anyone. I mean, surely is that not fraud?
Mm. But as I said, it's the cherry picking of different topics that are certainly going on. So in terms of where there's a will, there's a way. So there was I'm losing the track of time, because the COVID years is like childbirth, Tony. Once it happens, you don't, you just block it out from your memory and you don't remember it. But there was the case of the mother, the parents that were prosecuted for allowing their daughter to perform sex acts on the way to school in a brothel, and that hit public consciousness.
Yes.
And I know there was an outcry from people saying, well, how on earth can this be happening in New Zealand? And then that got very hushed up and sort of, I thought, softened on the basis of, oh no, we can't talk about this too much because of cultural differences.
Yes.
Which I thought was just quite disgusting, because essentially it was, you know, the parents sending their daughter in to perform sex acts to earn some extra money. So then looking at that in terms of what brings women to this place to begin with, and you have done some work on that, and the profile of prostitutes, this again is from your UN submission, the reason given for entering and staying by 92.8% of women is financial. There's a cost of living crisis going on right now. That to me seems like it could be the perfect storm to see an explosion of women literally facing that they've got no choice other than entering sex work to literally put meals on the table. Is that anecdotally the sort of stuff that you guys are seeing at Family First?
So we haven't done too much work since we produced the report. The fact is that it's so easy for housewives to moonlight now. All they have to do is to go out on the streets and do it. And the normal prostitutes react against that because it's taking their pitch. The other huge thing is that it's so easy for girls to start to do it. And I spent some time with one of the ladies from the EGPAT organisation. And she shocked me by saying that some of the young girls now are going out and prostituting just to buy label goods. So they want a $1,000 handbag. They'll go out on the streets and just prostitute.
And that's happening in New Zealand?
Oh, yeah. And this was three, four years ago.
Right. So what's driving them? How can they believe that that is safe?
Well, they don't know any different. If we would like to move on to the work that I've been doing in the last year, since I did the presentation to Canada, and I linked up with some incredible people who put together some presentations. Well, this one lady, her name's Heidi Olsen, and she's a SANE nurse, and she's interviewed and counselled over 2,500 children who've had sex attacks performed on them in the last three, 4 years. She found that what is now happening is that child-on-child sexual attacks are increasing beyond anything that any predators are doing now. 40% of the attacks that she investigates are promoted by child-on-child. And then we're talking to ages down to about 8-year-old. She's investigated other areas. She's actually, one of the things I've done over the years is I've talked to people all over the world in various organisations. And she talks to people in the UK and has been on many websites explaining what's happening with these children. And what she found out was about 2015, when smartphones came into being, then child-on-child sexual attacks started to happen. And it comes back to porn. And so we haven't really discussed porn and the effects of porn. So perhaps I can take a step back there. One of the problems with the violence in prostitution over the recent years is the porn industry. And the porn has become incredibly violent. When most people, sort of my age certainly, or in 20 years younger, think that porn is the sort of Playboy picture and that sort of thing.
The busty lass in the centrefold under, hidden under dad's bed, that sort of thing.
Mm. And even at worst, that it's, as this lady talks about, vanilla sex, a couple of people in the nude performing sex acts and that's what it is. But it's no longer like that. There's one organisation in the UK now called the New Drug. And what it is, they're talking about pornography because pornography is an actual drug. And one of the things that the industry does, porning industry does, is they allow free access to, let's say, ordinary pornography, knowing that most people will, nearly all people will become addictive and want to have more detailed and more violent sex, or somewhat more violent sex. And then they have to pay for that. So that's where they make the money. But what's happening on these websites is the incredible violence. Again, one of the pieces of information I sent you was about Natalie Thorburn in New Zealand, who interviewed 9 girls, underage girls. He just advertised, I think it was under a motorway, on a poster, and met them under a motorway and interviewed them. She's a sociologist, and then put a report out. Each one of those girls, 9 girls, hated what they were doing. They wanted to exit sex trade. And they'd all had mental problems, suffering mental problems. And what these general children have seen now, Heidi found out, was from 2015. Now they have smartphones. They're downloading this really violent information. And some of them have been downloading stuff since they were, 5, 6 years old. Children themselves are addicted to it. What's happening is in the families is that, in families and just boyfriend, girlfriend, is that these child-on-child sex attacks are occurring. saying children under 10 years old and this sort of thing, as she says, is children of this age, they have no empathy at all. And all they're doing is, what they're doing is repeating the utter violence, all the different sexual connections that the adults have, the choking, the gagging, they're seeing online on porn. And so you have this massive influx that's occurring. She got onto the Department of Defense websites in America and found out that on their defense plants throughout the world, they've got 6,000 cases of child-on-child sexual attacks.
It's just, it's mind-blowing. It's
this is the thing that I think may get round to the public and really stir them up.
What is the prostitutes collective's view on somebody wanting to exit the industry? So you've got these young girls that say, for argument's sake, well, actually, there was something you see here, actually. A recent US government-funded survey of 123 survivors showed that 50% had started as minors, with 24% beginning under the age of 14. Now, it's not a difficult leap to assume that those numbers could correlate to this country. So even if you're a young girl, you've been a runaway or what have you, you're now 18 or 19 years old, you've decided that you've had enough, or you may have had an experience that, like a violence experience from client who has scared you and you want to get out, and you go to the Prostitutes Collective. Do they have any mechanism to help these girls transition out of sex work? Or as far as they're concerned, it's like, no, we're only interested if you're flat on your back and wanting to earn money. What's the attitude?
The NZPC, it's an abysmal for them to use the word exit. They have no facilities and not interested, even when young girls of 14. I think Chelsea has mentioned this, that young girls go there at 15, 14, and all they do is to provide them with direct protection, condoms and lubrication, which actually the NZPC manufacture and supply themselves. As an aside, they do nothing unless it's in one or two cases they've been known to send the girls to the SIFs or someone. But essentially, they just ignore the situation. Provide their job is to provide health and safety, and so forget the safety.
Yeah,
they just provide the condoms and any advice they want on how to have sex and anything else. NZPC are really antagonistic to any survivors that try and speak out against prostitution, and they've been known to gang up on speakers at meetings and harass them out in the open. So they're violently opposed to exiting. They just cannot imagine that anyone would want to move from what they themselves term the sex industry. It is their industry, and that's what they want to do, is to protect it.
Mm. Right, yeah, and I know I've spoken previously, I think, to Denise there, it's very heavily funded. So Denise, I've spoken to Denise Ritchie before, do go back and people and listen to that replay. I have it on my replays page on the app with Reality Check Radio. There are two elements. Denise very much talks about the Nordic model, which looks at stopping the demand, so stopping the Johns wanting to go in and purchase sex or sex acts from these women. But in a way, I think it needs to be more than that. It needs to be sort of like a two-pronged attack by discouraging people from entering this workplace and to begin with, and actually having a full and frank conversation over the dangers, the actual true dangers and natures of the work, as well as the dangers of those wanting to do it. And a full honest inquiry, really, isn't it, Tony? I mean, this is what you've tried to do with your report, which is so, I mean, this, look, honestly, listeners, this report that Tony has co-authored, I mean, it is nearly 100 pages long. It is fully referenced. All the data is there. It is chilling. I'm just thankful. I've looked at this and it is really quite chilling. And as you said, Bob McCroskey and his team at Family First put out press releases. They did everything and not a single peep on it. it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking that I think Kiwi parents especially need to know about this. They need to know what's going on. So where to next? The report is out that you've got it. How do people get information around this, or at least start applying pressure to those either in government or in their local body to actually at least get this information out and heard and a conversation started? What are some of the work that you're doing in that space?
Well, one of the some of the contacts I've got is people in, particularly America, have got extremely good training programs that people can take into schools to enlighten the girls on exactly what's happening. And that's both for pornography and for prostitution. And particularly now with Heidi Olsen, I really like you to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
And you will find that she is an amazing person, and she's the facts and figures that support what's happening. And one of the things is I highlighted originally when this gender change was coming in. And this is what I see is happening now, particularly with the child-on-child abuse. It is skyrocketing. And what happens, as Heidi says, with these families, is it's not just the victim. So she's interviewing them in a hospital setting, and she's worked a technique that she can get the young girls to start to tell their stories. And if you think things I've said are shocking, what she says are 10 times worse. It stopped my blood when I read some of the things or heard her speak. When people realise what's happening in the families, because she just says it's not just a victim, it's a perpetrator, because the perpetrator's underage. They really don't know what they've been doing, because they've been...
Well, they've been digitally brainwashed, haven't they?
Literally, that's it. They've been brainwashed. And say they have no empathy for their victim. And then, of course, the families involved, it doesn't get talked out in public, because it's a shame on the family. And again, it's happening with brother and sister. Brother and sister, it's incestuous, and that's what's happening, and that certainly doesn't get talked about. And so somehow we need to bring this out into the open. And I see that being the huge sweeping change that people suddenly realise what we have done as a society with prostitution and with pornography. Because pornography is the thing that drives prostitution. Didn't actually mention that often these men, and I think come out with these films that we see tonight, that the men will not even ask the wives of their partners to perform some of these tasks. So they go and practice it on the prostitutes, which is why the violence with the prostitutes has increased so much. But I really see that school education is really important. And again, education of the police to be more accepting and understand when these girls go.
So. And I mean, the difficulty we've got too, Tony, with that is, of course, you know, in schools right now, they're more interested in confusing the kids to each, you know, of what even biological sex they are.
Yeah.
When actually,
yeah.
I mean, when you put in context what you have just said to what the kids are learning in with this new form of sex ed in terms of gender and the like, it is just ridiculous. Like, you just, it actually puts it all into perspective. It just shows you how trivial that is and actually what is going on. And I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface in terms of economics. There is so much more to talk about, and this is a topic that I certainly am not going to be letting go on, and I'd actually love to get you back over time as this progresses. So in terms of information, if a parent out there has heard all of this, they have had an experience or something has happened, or they have a concern or what have you, what is a good point of contact for them to get more information in regards to what is going on and the work that's happening behind the scenes? Is it contacting family first in the first instance, or is there elsewhere that you would recommend?
It's probably myself at the moment. Yes, I've actually set up another email that can be used. It's not pra@outlook.com.
There we go. That's very good. Not PRA at Outlook.com.
Hey, look, I did that after the Canadian speech.
Hey, look, Tony, this has been fascinating. And yeah, I think there has to be a part two for this conversation. I mean, as I said, we've barely scratched the surface on this. This is Tony Pitt. He's been the co-author of Is It Working? An evidence-based review of the decriminalisation of prostitution in New Zealand, as well as submissions to the UN and also, as you said, the Canadian speech, which we didn't even get to hardly. We just scratched the surface on that as well. Hey, thank you so much for your time this morning, Tony. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Marie. That report's available on the Family First website under research. Thank you very much. Bless you.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Tony.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.